Chapter 21, On My Own Behalf.
What happened?
Kyrus wondered in a daze. He had a headache that only a man bound for the chopping block would envy. He was lying down on some hard surface that felt like wood. Opening his eyes to try to get his bearings, the light sent shooting pains through his head, and he closed them again quickly. There was some sort of commotion that sounded like it was in the next room, but he could not tell with any certainty. There were raised and angry voices, but too many of them, and the overall effect was too loud. It was making his headache worse. His whole side hurt from whatever wooden surface he was lying on. He felt as if he must have been insensible for a long time, for his muscles had grown stiff due to lack of movement. He stretched out a bit and heard a clanking of chains. His ankles were shackled together. What he had first dismissed as a bad case of dry mouth was actually some sort of gag. He reached up to pull it loose but found his wrists shackled together as well and bound to a chain around his waist.
Oh, this definitely is not a good sign.
Opening his eyes just a slit, Kyrus managed to survey his surroundings. He was, unsurprisingly given the shackles, in a cell. Kyrus had never been to Scar Harbor's jail, a failing of his cultural upbringing, no doubt, but was clever enough to puzzle out that it was his present location. He was surrounded on three sides and above by stone bricks, with a wall of bars completing the room. The floor was dirt-covered, but Kyrus suspected that it too was stone or bedrock not far down. He was lying on a wooden cot, with the only other furnishing in the room being a chamber pot. With a supreme effort, Kyrus rolled enough that he could look at the wall that he was lying nearest and saw that there was a small, wide, barred window above him near the ceiling of the cell. The window allowed in fresh air, a little, unwelcome at the moment, light, and the noises from the street that he had been hearing. Kyrus knew only one modestly effective cure for headaches. He relaxed as best he could and drew in a bit of ether. The cool rush cleared his head a bit. It did not eliminate the pain, but it helped markedly in clearing the foggy haze that the pain left in his head. He was able to sit up without the world spinning, and decided that it was worth an attempt to do so. Though he had drawn in a little ether, after a few moments he became irritatingly aware of the fact that he was holding it. As it began to burn, and it occurred to Kyrus that he had not the ability to cast any spells, bound up as he was. He looked about for a likely place to dump the excess discreetly, and found that they left him no water. He was almost glad he had not yet used the chamber pot, sparing himself that unsavory odor, should he have boiled it off. He decided on the bars of the cell door as his likeliest option, and diverted the ether there. He saw no visible effect from it, but knew that the bars would be, at the least, rather uncomfortably warm to the touch. The bars of the cell had surely cooled by the time the bailiffs arrived to drag Kyrus from his cell. They were two stocky men, cut from the just-obeying-orders cloth. Both were dressed in official uniforms of a drab brown, with minimal adornment, and carrying clubs slung from their belts. One carried a ring of keys and unlocked the cell door. The grating metal-on-metal sound of the key in the rusted lock pierced Kyrus's still-sensitive ears and drove tiny daggers of pain into his brain. The door opened with the creak one might expect of an unoiled iron cage, and the bailiff strode in. Without so much as a word, they hoisted Kyrus up under each arm and carried him bodily from the cell, shackled feet dragging along. Kyrus could not have kept up with their pace had he wanted to, hobbled as he was, and doubted he would much care for where they were taking him. They carried him down the row of cells beneath the jailhouse and to the stairs heading up.
"Well, at least this bodes well for seeing the light of day again," Kyrus mused darkly.
He had worried that he might be taken somewhere worse, and usually that sort of thing would suggest down rather than up, if the storybooks he had read were any indication. As they took the stairs,
Kairos contorted to dodge his head below one of the low rafters, causing his headache to renew its efforts. His feet bumped along at each step as they hung limply. Kairos was too tired to make the effort to pull them up or back out of the way. When they reached the top, they made their way past a short row of waiting constables, who fell in beside them as they proceeded. The jail was cleaner and more orderly up on the ground floor, with desks and storage rooms and hallways connected by barred doors. Kairos tried to make a map of it in his head, in case he were to attempt some sort of daring escape. To date, his most daring endeavor had been courting Abelay, so he expected that there might be a bit of learning curve in regards to jailbreaks. Still, what other options was he going to have?
Well, I can always try denying everything. Only a few officers of the constabulary saw anything, and it was late at night. They could have been overwrought and misinterpreted what they saw. Or maybe I can insist I was practicing parlor tricks, and it was all an act. Surely not enough people in Acardia are superstitious enough to believe in magic. Certainly not a magistrate.
Kairos had managed to make himself feel rather better about his prospects by the time they got him to the door. He would make his appeal to the magistrate, which is where he supposed they were bringing him, and convince everyone that the whole notion of magic was preposterous. Acardia was a rational, enlightened kingdom, too sensible to be overcome by fears of witchcraft. Of course, once Kairos passed clear of the door, the crowd, which had gone relatively quiet in the hours of waiting to see the witch, was re-energized. Thoughts of appealing to the better nature of a learned man of law and justice were quickly replaced with a sudden fear that he was going to be burned at the stake.
"Be gone, fiend! We do not want your kind! Get rid of him!
Hang him!
Leave us alone, witch!
Burn the witch!"
The latter was shouted more than once and was eventually taken up by the mob at large as a chant. Kairos suspected that he was being carried because any sane man would have likely tried to bolt if he was walking on his own. The two bailiffs carried him to a waiting wagon
and hefted him into it,
then climbed in with him. The constables kept the crowd back and away from the horses as the wagon driver got them moving. Kairos tried to slouch down below the level of the sides of the wagon to get out of sight of the crowd, but one of the bailiffs grabbed him and hauled him back up.
"Oh, no hiding, Mr. Witch," the bailiff told him in his gutter accent.
He seemed the sort who chose a life of thuggery in the service of law as a career option favorable to a life of thuggery outside it, and only because the pay was steady.
"They wants to see you, so they gets to see you."
Kairos hung his head and tried to block out the jeers and calls for his immolation, but there was only so little room inside one's own head in which to hide, and Kairos was beset on all sides. The ride to the courthouse was a short one, as it was located convenient to the jail, but it seemed an eternity to Kairos, whose confidence in the rationality of Acardians was severely shaken. He could not understand how the citizens could be convinced so quickly when he had only been arrested hours earlier, and no charges had yet been lodged against him officially. Across town, at a certain shop whose sign bore no picture, another crowd had gathered. This one was less angry and more curious, but still very excited. Constables had formed a loose ring around it and were keeping folks back from it. Inside, some of the more senior members of the sheriff's staff were rummaging through papers and books, gathering evidence. They had already found Kairos's notes, both those written in plain language and those that were written in an indecipherable and otherworldly script. The crowd was uninterested in the investigation of the shop. They had all gathered to catch a glimpse of the otherworldly light that shone out the door that had been left ajar. A light that had no visible origin, yet just kept glowing.
"Expert Kairos Hinterdale, how do you answer these charges?"
Lord Kenric Lionsvane asked. Kairos had formerly been charged with the practice of witchcraft and attacking officers of the peace.
Two men with crossbows aimed at his back stood just behind him as he sat on the dock, where he had just finished listening to the preliminaries of the case presented against him. He had been given to understand that if they heard anything that sounded like it might be magical in nature, he would be shot. But at least they had removed the gag from his mouth.
"I have done nothing wrong, your lordship," was all Kairos could manage.
He was terrified and disoriented. The shouting of the crowd had done little good for his still aching head, and he had never had much interest in court cases, so he was unfamiliar with how things were to be handled.
"Sheriff Marzimal, please present the evidence," the judge intoned.
The judge was an elderly man with a regal bearing. He wore the traditional black robes of a jurist, which hung loosely off his gaunt frame, and skullcap to match. His wrinkled face was pale and ashen as someone who had worked a lifetime indoors. His hooked nose supported a pair of gold-rimmed spectacles that caught the light strangely and obscured his eyes, making it seem as if he was not seeing what took place around him and giving him a detached air.
"Your lordship,"
the sheriff of Scar Harbor bowed slightly to the magistrate as he arose.
"I have five men who were witnesses to the sights in Mr. Hinterdale's shop last evening, three of whom can attest to having seen actual witchcraft performed in front of their very eyes, seen it, heard it, and had detritus from about the shop flung at them by means of it. Also, your lordship, we have the accused's own notes describing the methods and means of his dark art, written plainly in accordion. We also have a number of pages containing notes in an unknown language. I took the liberty of awakening the esteemed Professor Whittingham of the University's Department of Language and Foreign Studies, who could not so much as identify the characters or symbols being used. If these were not enough, your lordship, there is still, as of the last of my hearing, a light of inexplicable and unknowable origin shining from within the main work area of Mr. Hinterdale's shop. Your lordship, I am not a superstitious man, and a week ago, I would have thought it impossible. Today I stand before you and ask how this can be anything else but witchcraft," the sheriff concluded.
Kairos could not help but be impressed at the man's oratory ability, despite his predicament. Sheriff Marsimal could have been a thespian or perhaps a city councilor, but instead stayed on year after year as the sheriff in Scar Harbor. Kairos wondered if he kept the job because he had grown to like having everyone hang on his words as he made such speeches in court.
"Again, Expert Hinterdale, I would ask you to respond to this evidence,"
Lord Lionsvane instructed Kairos. Kairos's mouth was dry, but somehow managed to get even drier.
I hurt no one," he croaked.
He cleared his throat, fearing that the nervous crossbowman would fire quarrels into his back, but needing to make a case for himself.
"It is all harmless. Parlor tricks and such. This is all being taken much too far."
There was a general murmuring of dozens of conversations that began in the gallery at the first hearing of Kairos's defense. Many who had never met him just heard this witch speak for the first time, and he was hardly a threatening specimen. Kairos had barely been aware of the spectators within the courtroom until they started making noise. After the crowd outside and their calls for his gruesome demise, the relatively civil citizens in attendance had barely registered themselves in his consciousness being somewhat tenuous at the moment itself. He was feeling faint.
"Quiet now,"
Lord Lionsvane shouted, and the audience composed themselves once more.
"Mr. Hinterdale," he continued in a more professional tone, "you admit to these acts?"
"Yes, but..."
"And I have seen for myself, as Sheriff Marsimal took me by your shop this morning, that there is indeed an unhallowed sort of light that comes from nothingness."
"Well, you see..."
"Stop interrupting me, child, or it should go badly for you," Lord Lionsvane said. "And the lawmen you assaulted are rather upstanding and honest men, whose accounts, I believe, in spite of the fantastical nature of its description. Your lordship, I think that this is an instance where we might justifiably request an exemption from the prohibition on executions,"
Sheriff Marsimal said. At that mention of execution, Kyrus's heart began to race even quicker. He felt his breath coming shallow and rapidly.
"I am not a fearful man," the sheriff said, "but the existence of one such as this disturbs me to the core. I think..."
And that was the last that Kyrus heard before he lost consciousness, having passed out. Brannis awoke with a start. It was the middle of the night, but there was no denying how he felt. His head hurt for no reason he could rationalize, other than that Kyrus's head hurt, and that he had just been there in it, watching. He was not so debilitated by it as Kyrus had been, but he could feel the spot where Kyrus had hit his head on the cobblestones of the streets of Scar Harbor behind his shop.
"Have I gone mad?"
The question hung in Brannis's mind as he lay in bed, staring up at a ceiling that was too dark to see. The shock of his dream was enough to bring him fully awake, though he was still slightly disoriented. Acardia felt too real for Cadran to have fully sunk in just yet.
"That is the real question, is it not? If I have lost my faculties, then this is all really just a dream, and I can ignore it. Perhaps even find a way to rid myself of the dreams entirely. Surely there are potions or magic to cure me, or even just taking to strong drink at night to sleep in oblivion."
Brannis thought more about it for a few seconds.
"I could hide it, I think, never speaking of it to anyone. If I am strong enough, they will never catch on. I would have to be careful never to let slip anything I know that does not belong to the waking world. If I'm lucky, I could take the secret to my grave, never having breathed a word of it. I have just been given the chance of a lifetime. I cannot risk losing it, can I?"
Brannis thought of all the wonderful things he had seen and felt in his dreams. Kyrus was not well-traveled, but had experienced friends and a budding romance, and even felt the rush of the ether. It was the latter that tugged particularly at Brannis's conscience. He knew that he had never imagined how it could feel to actually draw ether. He doubted his mind could have conjured such a euphoric feeling. Had it given the same joy as lovemaking, he could have accused his dreams of plagiarism. But the drawing of ether was entirely different. It was like standing in a hurricane untouched, as the wind blew through you, cleaning out the mind and body and leaving it feeling pure.
"It has to be real. If it is real, Kyrus needs me. If I am to help, all I can give is knowledge. The only knowledge that might save him is magic."
Brannis threw off his bedclothes and stumbled in darkness over to the window. He drew open the heavy velvet curtains that had so effectively cloaked the bedchamber in darkness. Pale moonlight wafted into the room, giving everything a ghostly quality, nearly devoid of color. Brannis's eyes adjusted to the light, and he could make out the clothing he had worn the previous day. Though they smelled of stale sweat, they would serve his purposes, and Brannis quickly dressed. As he finished pulling on his boots, he walked swiftly for the door, then hesitated. He considered for a moment whether he ought to bring his sword, but then dismissed the idea. He was not going far, not even leaving the estate. Brannis walked down the heavy carpeted halls of Solaran Estate in thankful silence. Had his family been less indentured to comfort and luxury, he might have had to walk down a hall of bare stone and would have needed to pad his steps if he wished to avoid causing commotion. The thick red safshan carpets, hundreds of summers old and preserved by magic, cushioned even his booted steps and muffled them to a whisper. A soft glow lit every hallway of the building at night, lest anyone seeking a late evening snack, or just arriving late to bed, need to carry illumination of their own. He made his way to the family library, which his father had, until quite recently, of course, taken custody of as his personal study. Doors within the estate were never locked, and Brannis opened the rightmost of the double doors and quietly entered. The heavy, ornately carved wooden door made not the slightest sound as it swung. Unlike the halls, the library was dark. Brannis felt his way across the dark room by only the scant light that came in from the hall. when he reached the window. He drew open the curtains to cast enough light, hopefully, to read by. It was difficult to find a light source anywhere in the estate. Even his cousin Daniel was enough of a sorcerer to light up any place he chose. Brannis was so rarely at home that he did not keep a lamp or magical light device about for his own use. It was fortunate that the moon was high and mostly full that night, and the clouds were too thin and wispy to block much light, else Brannis would have been unable to find anything at all. As it was, he could only read the titles of volumes whose spines faced the window. Brannis scanned the ones he could see. Trontor's Alchemy, Native Species of Tuurman, The Hurak Dynasty, A Sorcerer's Perspective, The Warlock Prophecies, The Life of Fexil Solaran, Artifacts of the Early Imperial Era. Then a title written in a language Brannis could not read. Then, Geography and the Flow of Ether. And then, My Journal, Telemiran Solaran. Brannis thought that the last sounded promising and pulled it from its shelf. Brannis scanned the first few pages. They were yellowed with age, but bore the distinctively smooth feel of magical preservation. Talking about his early life, goes on a sea voyage, meets foreigners and shows them magic, more sea voyage. Drat, he was naught but an explorer, nothing about how to do any magic. Brannis shoved the volume back into place with somewhat less care and respect, normally due a 400-odd summer old book. He picked up where he left off. Predatory avians. Geology as pertains to underground structures. Collected maps of the ocean currents. Coins. Sighing in annoyance with himself, Brannis could not help but wonder from the scant title what that one contained. He quickly pulled it off the shelf and looked inside. There was page after page of coins from various kingdoms and eras, sketched in fine detail by someone with ample free time. He angrily slammed it back into place and looked at the last two volumes on that shelf. Porporo Canis, Merchant King. Ways of the Old Gods. Brannis moved to the next shelf down and continued. Dark Tales for the Fireside. Adventures of Boppy the Rabbit. Saram's Children's Stories. Brannis quickly browsed the rest of the shelf. Nothing but children's books. Marouk may have taken the library for his study, but it was still the family's library. He continued scanning title after title. There were scholarly works, biographies, and storybooks, but he had yet to find anything that he could use. He needed instructions, notes. Something substantive that Kairos would be able to remember and make use of. He started taking books from the darkened shelves on the other side of the room and bringing them over to the window to read the titles. He discovered more of the same, perhaps with a few more personal journals of his ancestors. He was finding it difficult to believe that in a household of perhaps the most influential bloodline of sorcerers in the Empire, that there were no books on how to perform magic. Brannis admittedly had not looked at every book in the library, but he was getting the sense that if there were books in there of the type he was after, he ought to have found at least one so far. Brannis moved to his father's desk and gave it a quick check as well. It did not take long to decide that it was devoid of helpful writings as well. His father had either kept it very tidy, or some ambitious relatives had already absconded with anything of value. He must have kept everything in his office at the Tower of Contemplation, Brannis decided. That presented problems of its own, but not insurmountable ones. Brannis had already committed himself this far. He was prepared to do whatever it took now and deal with the consequences later. Brannis hurriedly drew the curtains closed again and made his way in the semi-darkness back out of the library. He considered his options. He could simply awaken someone and beg their assistance. Any number of sorcerers in the house could find him spells to escape from Kairos's situation. There was a reason the palace had warded cells for magic-capable prisoners. He could also ask either Iridan or Rashan for assistance. However, Iridan had already dismissed the dreams as nothing to worry about. And Rashan, Well, Rashan was not someone he was hoping to seek help from just then. He could sneak back into the academy, but there were so many ways that could be misinterpreted that he shuddered to think how it would be seen if he were to be caught. He bore little love for the instructors, and the feeling was mutual. Rummaging through their libraries might even be portrayed as some form of vengeful vandalism. The Tower of Contemplation seemed most promising. His father's office had been there, and if it had not yet been cleared of his personal effects, then his notes and reference materials ought still to be there. Plus, if he was unable to find anything useful in his father's office, there were other libraries in the tower as well. Kairos headed down the hall toward the main stairs, but then paused a moment. Backtracking, he jogged down to his room and retrieved Avalanche. Poking around his family's home was one thing. Snooping around in the headquarters of the Imperial Circle was a different matter. If questioned, he had plausible enough excuses to offer for being there so late, but it felt better to prepare for the worst. Brannis had decided to go on foot rather than alert the stable hands on both ends of his journey. Taking the same route he had taken just the previous night, coming back from the Bygones Day preparations, he set off for the palace at a jog. He found the usual rather lax security at the Tower of Contemplation and let himself in. He wondered idly if he ought to mention increasing the guard contingent of the tower to someone. No thief in his right mind would break into the tower, but that did not prevent the insane thieves from becoming wealthy if they dared to try it and got lucky. Brannis counted himself among the latter for the night, and though it was not wealth he sought, he was certainly hoping for a bit of luck. He found the door to his father's office warded, and having no means to open it short of using Avalanche to stave it in, he had slumped against it as he considered his next plan of action. Sighing, he banged his head lightly against the door, wincing at the expected pain that did not actually materialize. "At least I seem to have gotten past that headache. I hope that means Kairos is doing better." He needed to think of something quickly, before it was too late to help. He tried to remember all the special assignments that Rashan had given out to the rest of his surviving men from the Kelvi expedition. The warlock had wanted to keep them close to prevent silly rumors from spreading about the time before he arrived back in Kadrin. He had neither seen nor heard from Sir Lugrin since they arrived, and the common soldiers had been given various assignments in and around the palace and tower. "That works," Brannis realized. "Todd and Joe Duel are guards for one of the tower libraries. If I cannot get in past those two scholars, I am hopeless." Brannis pulled himself to his feet and headed back downstairs 3 floors to where he was fairly sure the North Library was located. It was, unsurprisingly, on the north side of the tower. If only he had managed to get the floor correct. Brannis wended his way through the corridors until he saw them and confirmed that he had chosen correctly. There were Todd and Joe Duel, fancied up in their pristine new red and white circle guard uniforms. They were leaning on their halberds and carrying on a conversation as he neared them.
"Well, I know first thing I plan is to get a place of my own," Todd commented, not even looking down the hall where Brannis approached from.
"A woman for me, I thinks," Joe Duel replied, matter-of-factly.
"Ah, not wasting it all on whores, are you?"
Todd sounded disappointed in his friend.
"Nah, I think I got the coin now to court a girl proper. You know, get me a wife, like,"
Joe Duel said, but just before noticing Brannis coming right down the hall at them. Both men scrambled to arrange themselves in proper guard pose, upright and holding a weapon usually covered it.
"Easy, fellows,"
Brannis said as he got close enough that he would not have to yell to talk to them.
"Just here for the library, not any sort of official inspection." "Ah, sir, you ought to know that we cannot let you in," Todd said.
"Orders and all," Joe Duel agreed. "Right from Warlock Rashan. This is our first night at it, and we cannot botch it up right off."
Brannis could not help noticing that they largely dropped the gutter slang when addressing him.
"You stand relieved. Go get some sleep," Brannis ordered.
Neither man budged.
Warlock Rashan's orders, sir, Todd told him.
He does not want folks poking about at night until it settles down a bit, Jodul said. Come morning, I am sure you can get him to let you have a look.
Brannis felt himself growing exasperated. Listen, boys, I have no time to explain properly, but I need to get into that library. I do not have time to wait until morning. Go have yourselves a good night's rest. I will make sure no one else gets in.
Brannis tried to sound calm and reasonable, but his sword hand was across his body, resting on the hilt of Avalanche. The point was not missed by either of the two guards. For all their other shortcomings, Todd and Jodul were survivors. They had heard of the incident at Army headquarters, where Brannis had driven that same sword an arm's length deep into the stone floor.
Yes, sir, they said in unison.
Neither of them saluted as they stepped aside and let Brannis pass. As Brannis opened the, thankfully not warded, door, they made their retreat down the corridor. Brannis shut the door behind him. The room was well lit, with light just sufficient for comfortable reading anywhere in the room, and no more. Brannis picked a row of shelves at random and started browsing titles. Ether Theory for Plants. A Decomposition of Fire Magics. The Sorcerer's Travel Companion. Ward Maintenance. Care and Nurturing of Familiars for Increased Ether Generation. Maximizing Spell Effects with Minimal Ether. Guide to Silent Casting, a Novel Approach. Magics of Stone and Earth. Brannis nodded to himself.
All right, that one sounds promising. Kyrus is in a cell of stone blocks.
He pulled the volume off the shelf and examined it. It did not look especially old, but he suspected that extraordinary measures were likely used to keep old books intact over the course of centuries. He flipped through it and found that it was written in rune language, which he was fully capable of reading, and it was even illustrated with diagrams showing what various forms of spell could do. Brannis took it over to one of the many small tables scattered about the library and sat down to study it. There was a spell to crush rock, and another to form rock dust into larger pieces. He found a spell that was a more effective way of levitation that was suited specifically to rock and earth. He found one that could burrow, and one that could make solid stone turn into a runny sort of mud. Brannis knew he was probably going to have to leave Kyrus to his own devices to get the gag out of his mouth enough to speak. But the problem he kept seeing was that all of the gestures for the spells involved motions that could not be done while he was shackled. He kept reading, hoping to find one that was a one-handed gesture or something just done with the fingers. He scanned quickly through the rest of the book to see if any were simpler spells, but found that it was not the case. Leaving that book open on the table to the page with the burrowing spell, Brannis went back to the shelves. He wanted to see if there were any books that might help with getting Kyrus unshackled. He looked for titles that dealt with metals, skipping over the rest for now. Manipulating Metals turned out to be about changing alloys to improve sword performance. Cold Steel was actually a book describing how warlocks combine sword and spell in battle. Melting Metal was actually a scholarly work describing the ways that metals were smelted, but it was written for the hobbyist sorcerer who practiced metallurgy in his free time. In between passages explaining the necessary temperatures to get various metals to melt and the most advantageous mineral additives to strengthen them, there were helpful variant spells that worked well for achieving those temperatures. Unfortunately, it was poorly organized, and each section referenced other works, where further information could be found. If Brannis were to get any use out of it, he would have to search through and find the basic spells the author kept referencing, and then work out how they would need to be modified to heat a particular metal most economically. The economy of ether was good to note, since Brannis had no basis for comparison as to how well Kyrus drew ether. Brannis was taking Melting Metal over to the table to read when he heard the library door open. His hand immediately went for his blade, but he did not draw it. Standing behind the shelves for cover, He stood quietly and waited. For what seemed like hours, there was no sound at all, and Brannis was getting ready to dismiss the sound of the door as paranoia. Then, down the end of the row, he saw a head poke around the corner.
"Aha, there you are," Rashan said, chuckling. "Your two friends are better soldiers than you gave them credit for. They came straight to me after you got rid of them."
"So it would seem," Brannis commented flatly, trying to see where the warlock was going with this.
"So what brings you down to the libraries at this hour? Have you been trying to study up to graduate the academy? What was so important that you had to threaten your way past the guards?"
Brannis struggled to find some excuse for being there. His excuse for nearly anyone else would have been that he was working on orders from Rashan, but that was unlikely to work in his current scenario.
"Oh, stop trying to think up a lie and just tell me. Unless you're a spy from a Grin or a goblin sympathizer, it's not as if I would kill you for whatever reason you have," Rashan said.
Brannis cursed silently in his head. The warlock was too clever to be stalled.
"Well, I suppose that ought to reassure me. I do not think it absolves me of being thought a madman, though. I admit this is all quite suspicious," Brannis admitted.
He could feel his heart starting to quicken in his chest. He did not want to have Rashan think that he could not handle his new position and take it away from him this soon.
"Brannis, I have been thought dead for a century, and less than a day after returning, I find I have to kill a quarter of the inner circle for treason. You shall hardly have a monopoly on being thought a madman, regardless of your tale. Besides, now you have piqued my curiosity, and I shall not be denied whatever story you have. Be warned. I have been lied to by many of the best liars in Cadran, the nobles, and can generally sniff out a false tale."
Brannis swallowed hard. "At this point, if I admit it, maybe I can get him to help. I do not know if I will get a good enough plan together in time at the rate things are going now."
"Well, this might take a bit of explaining," Brannis said. "We should sit."
Brannis went over to the table where magics of stone and earth sat open and settled into one of the chairs. Rashan dropped lightly into one of the chairs opposite him, twisting his head around to make out the title of the book Brannis had been reading. "Studying fortifications and how to destroy them with magic? Commendable, but not Emergency in the Night fair, I think. Out with it now. What sordid tale do you have for me?"
Brannis took a deep breath to steady his nerves.
"Well, this is about my dreams. I do not quite know what to call them. Visions? Of another place. I see things through someone else's eyes," Brannis began, wondering if he could get Rashan to jump in and offer insights.
"Fascinating," Rashan commented, his tone light, and his eyes fixed on Brannis's, as if he were hearing the opening to a fireside storyteller's yarn.
"Well, in this other place, this other person has gotten himself into some trouble. I know he can learn things that I have seen, so I was looking for a spell to get him out of his predicament."
Brannis phrased that about as mildly as he could think of, without straying from the truth.
"So what sort of predicament? Surrounded by goblins? Backed against a cliff and facing doom at the hands of angry ogres?
Just caught in the bedchamber of a princess?"
"Brannis, you are a lousy storyteller. Details, please," Rashan said. "He's been locked up for being a witch, and he's likely trapped in a cell awaiting execution. He is shackled hand and foot and gagged. I'm looking for a spell that could get him out of a stone dungeon cell, or out of a set of iron shackles, preferably both," Brannis said.
Rashan looked pensive for a moment. Then he did something Brannis had yet to see from the warlock. He cast a spell.
"Denek, Iliaru, Estata, Pogulu, Benna, Tetka, Fenex, Reflaragna," he said, and pressed his hands together, rubbing them quickly in tiny circles. Rashan's form became hazy and indistinct, then fully transparent. Brannis watched the warlock pass his hand through the table. After a moment, he solidified again.
It allows one to pass through solid objects and requires minimal hand movement, Rashan explained. Any suggestions on how to get the gag out of his mouth? Brannis asked, hoping perhaps the warlock would give him all the answers he would need. He had not honestly considered that Rashan would be nonplussed by the whole affair and decide to help him. Well, if your alter ego can use ether at all, just burn it through. If he's about to be executed otherwise, I would think a few burns would be worth the cost. Oh, and if he fails to escape, at least have the historical sense to go out with something noteworthy, like a plume of flame engulfing everyone in sight. Sorcerers are not meant to be rounded up and beheaded like thieves. Do not start a precedent. Rashan winked and stood to leave. Thank you, Rashan. Now I just need to get back to sleep so he can use this information, Brannis said. Would anyone mind if I slept here until morning? It was certainly an unusual request, but Brannis thought it by far the least insane thing he had done that night. By all means, here, let me help. And Rashan appeared to concentrate on Brannis, and he started to feel just a bit dizzy. Brannis, you are far too resistant to magic for your own good. If that source of yours were shut any tighter, you would be a demon like me. I might be able to tear you in half with lightning or cremate you where you stand with a firestorm, but I cannot affect you directly with a simple sleep enchantment, Rashan said. Let me try from a bit closer. Rashan got right up next to Brannis and held his hands out just to either side of his head. As soon as Brannis closed his eyes to try and help out by relaxing, Rashan balled his right fist and slugged him hard right in the temple. The warlock was quick to react, catching the much larger knight as he slumped out of his chair and laying him sprawled out on the floor. Good luck, Rashan wished him, and retired from the library.